Music recorded in Azerbaijan as part of the 2013 World Roots Academy. World Roots was presented by Lucy Duran and produced by James Parkin.
In concert on BBC Radio 3, the remarkable Italian violinist Fabio Biondi. Music from the late 18th century by Haydn, Mozart, and a composer known to generations of violinists for a piece he didn't actually write, Gaetano Pugnani. The real Pugnani, played by Fabio Biondi and the English Concert. Radio 3 live in concert, Tuesday night at 7:30.
This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's now 11 o'clock and it's time for Jazz Lineup with Claire Martin.
Ultimately, I want every instrument to feel like it's an extension of my body, my soul. I want it to be my voice. And I want to sing through that instrument.
The voice of American sax star Joshua Redman. More from that interview, plus a profile of his new album, which is out this week on Nonesuch, coming up later on the show. Tonight's concert set was recorded at the Steinway II Piano Festival and features two gifted Hungarian pianists, Gábor Zeki and János Nagy. Also on the programme, I'll be joined by pianist Nikki Iles and vocalist Norma Winston, MBE, who are currently on tour with The Printmakers, celebrating Nikki's 50th birthday. Let's start the show with something from The Bad Plus. 2 years ago, they released their first album of all original material called Never Stop. The Bad Plus are a trio made up of pianist Ethan Iverson, bassist Reed Anderson and drummer David King. Together, they unleashed their own adventurous compositions and arrangements and introduced electronics into the mix with layers of synthesizers and electronic drums. This added another edgy dynamic to their already boundary-pushing trademark sound. So let's hear a piece by bassist Reed Anderson, but take my advice and don't try and work out the time signature. From the CD Made Possible, this is 7-Minute Mind. Thank you. 7 Minute Mind, taken from the CD made possible by The Bad Plus, and they're on tour in the UK throughout May, and you can hear them in the 12th at Bristol's Colston Hall, and their tour goes through into the 16th, where they end in Norwich at the Norfolk and Norwich Festival. And for more details about their tour, check out the link on the Jazz Lineup webpage via the Radio 3 website. Recorded in Scotland in October last year, In the Spirit of the Duke is a live recording of the Scottish National Jazz Orchestra in one of its best ever performances. Director Tommy Smith set out to give audiences as close to the real deal Ellington experience as possible and presented the music, which spanned almost Ellington's entire career, to an enthusiastic crowd over 4 nights. The repertoire ranges from Ellington hits such as Sepia Panorama to Harlem Airshaft, Black and Tan Fantasy to Creole Love Call. But it's the segue of Kinda Dukeish and Rockin' in Rhythm I've chosen for us today, not least because of the amazing piano talents of Brian Kellock, who plays some amazing stride piano before setting the pace for the ensemble to follow him on Rockin' in Rhythm. Let's hear the Scottish National Jazz Orchestra. Thank you.
Quigley, Frank Kellogg, Scottish National Jazz Orchestra.
Taken from the CD In the Spirit of the Duke, that was Kinda Dukeish and Rockin' in Rhythm, played by the Scottish National Jazz Orchestra under the director, saxophonist Tommy Smith. And that live CD is available now on Spartacus Records. Before I speak to my guests today about their current tour across the UK, let's hear a track with both of them in fine form from the Kenny Wheeler, Norma Winston London Vocal Project CD. This is Nicky Isles playing the piano with Norma Winston singing The Hat.
Beautiful hat, more than anything. And through my hat, my beautiful hat, I see a wedding ring. The king will marry me and make me his own.
For Norma Winston singing The Hat from the CD Mirrors, and that's the Kenny Wheeler Norma Winston London Vocal Project. And I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by Nicky Isles and Norma Winston now. Welcome to Jazz Lineup.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about this tour, because I think there's a big birthday involved.
There is, yes. I've hit the half a century.
The bullseye.
That's it, yeah. Not embarrassed at all.
Nikki Owls is 50.
Somebody will mention it if you don't. Someone's bound to.
You've worked together many times over the years. Norma, as a vocalist, it's very important to have a synergy with the pianist. Tell me about your connection with Nikki.
I wrote words to one or two of Nikki's pieces and sang them with her. And I just love her, you know, the attention to detail and, you know, the care that she takes over everything. And, I love her playing. That's it, really.
So what material are you going to be playing on these dates? Is it all your originals? Have got any? Norma, you're a prolific lyric writer. I mean, any of yours?
Yeah, we're doing some... I've written some words to a couple of Nikki's fairly new tunes. Well, one very new, and another one that we've done for a while wordlessly, and I've always meant to write words to, but, you know, needed the deadline of a tour to finish them. And and there's a couple of Ralph Towners, a new Ralph Towner, well, new to me anyway, that I've written words for, which we're including.
It must be great to hear your songs with words. I mean,
it's an honour. It's fantastic. You know, and we had the rehearsal on Sunday, and I've particularly this one tune called Tideways about Norma's house. She just started singing words on Sunday. I wasn't expecting it at all, you know. And it was just like shivers, you know.
Yeah, I bet. Because playing with a singer is really an art form, isn't it? I know you're married to Pete Churchill, great pianist and singer. Yeah. But is this something that you've mastered over the years? Because I think it, you know, pianists and singers, you know, it really has to click.
Well, it's serving the song, really. You have to be egoless and... you know, it is an art, you know, and I've always loved pianists that are great at it, you know, John Taylor, all people Norma have worked with, but and Jimmy Rolls, all those people.
Because you're stripped down, you have to frame the voice, don't
absolutely,
you, really?
Yeah. And with a great singer, it's, you know, you're in there even before they sing.
Talking about the London Vocal Project, what was it like singing with them? Did you do it at the same time?
Yes, we did record at the same time, although I think it was more they put their tracks on as a kind of guide and then they went in and they redid everything when they were all together, because I don't think they ever had the full complement when I was there doing my tracks.
Right.
But it's
great,
it's lovely actually singing with them. And of course, some of them I've known, like students at Guildhall, you know, over the years and the Royal Academy. And it's actually lovely to do something with them.
It's very unusual, I thought, to hear everyone together. I thought it's a really unusual album. Let's hear another track then before we say goodbye. Happy birthday, Nikki, by the
Thanks,
way.
Thanks, Norma. Here.
Let's hear the track, The Broken Heart. Can you tell me something about that?
Well, actually, it was one that was, I think it was just turned up on the day, actually. I looked at this part and we hadn't actually, I think it was a late... edition, wasn't it?
It was. I think Kenny suddenly... It wasn't in the original group of poems, but Ken just found this other one that he liked and just set it for the choir. And I love it.
It's quite powerful, isn't it?
A late edition, that one.
Well, let's hear it. It's from the CD Mirrors, Kenny Wheeler, Norma Winston, London Vocal Project, and it's the track The Broken Heart. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As well as my
from the CD Mirrors, that was the track The Broken Heart, and many thanks to Nicky Isles and Norma Winston for coming in to talk about their current project. And that CD will have its official London launch at King's Place on the 25th of May and will include the whole lineup with Kenny Wheeler, Mark Lockhart, Steve Watts, Martin France, Pete Churchill and all the singers from the London Vocal Project. But before that date, you can hear The Printmakers at the Theatre Royal in Nottingham on Thursday the 9th of May, and on Friday the 10th at the WASH College of Music and Drama. Check out the Jazz Lineup website for the complete tour dates. I'm Claire Martin, and this is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 on 90 to 93 FM, online and on digital radio, and remember, you can catch us on the BBC iPlayer for the next 7 days. Tudo is the first studio album in a decade from Brazilian icon Joyce Moreno, and it's entirely made up of her own compositions. Tudo means everything in Portuguese, and this album terrifically showcases Joyce's remarkable singing, her songwriting skills and her deep passion for the music, which has enabled her to achieve a very successful career spanning over 44 years. Recorded in Rio de Janeiro last March, Joyce also co-produced the album with her lifelong partner, Tati Moreno, who also plays drums and percussion on the record. Well, every track is vibrant and contagious, delicate and romantic, and my favourite is the opening track, which we'll play for you now. Here is Quero Uva Jao.
Tudo é ventania, tudo é ilusão, tudo tem seu preço, tudo é só o começo, tudo tem o avesso, tudo tem perdão. Tudo tem motivo, tudo é
coletivo e tudo a solidão. Tudo é poesia, pois é. Tudo melodia, tudo é harmonia, tudo é uma canção. Tudo é uma canção.
From her new release Tudo, that was Joyce Moreno singing her own composition, Quiero Uvejoy, and that track perfectly illustrates the quote from Tom Jobim that Joyce is indeed one of the greatest singers alive, and that CD is out now on the Far Out record label. I'm Claire Martin, and this is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 on 90 to 93 FM, online and on digital radio. And remember, you can catch us on the BBC iPlayer for the next 7 days. Joshua Redman is one of the most acclaimed and charismatic jazz artists to have emerged from the 1990s. He began playing the clarinet age 9 before switching to what became his primary instrument, the tenor saxophone, 1 year later. Nominated twice for a Grammy Award and receiving top honours in critics and readers' polls of Downbeat magazine, Jazz Times and The Village Voice, Redman has played with musicians such as Brian Blade, Stevie Wonder, Ray Brown, Elvin Jones, Quincy Jones. The list is highly impressive and almost endless. All this, as well as his own adventurous and diverse musical projects, has led him to be one of the most sought-after jazz musicians in the world today. He will be appearing at the Wigmore Hall in London on May the 11th in a duo setting with bassist Christian McBride in his role as Jazz Series Curator. Well, our own Kevin LeGenre caught up with Joshua a few weeks ago, but before we hear that interview, let's hear a track from the new release, Walking Shadows, and this is Joshua's take on the Billy Strayhorn classic, Lush Life.
Thank you. Lush Life by Billy Strayhorn, as interpreted by Joshua Redman and featured on his new album Walking Shadows, which is his first orchestral set. I'm joined by Joshua Redman in the Jazz Lineup studio. Joshua, hello.
Thanks, Kevin. It's great to be here.
So we've just been listening to Lush Life, which is one of the great compositions, I think, not just in the Billy Strayhorn canon, but in, I suppose, the whole canon of great ballads and great...
Absolutely.
...great romantic songs in jazz. And it's featured on this record, which I believe is your first with an orchestra.
Yes, I think 15 strings, a small chamber orchestra.
Tell me how the project came together. When did you first have the idea?
It's something that I've always wanted to do. I always thought, oh, someday I'd love, well, first and foremost, to do a ballads record, because I love ballads. I love them as a listener, and I've always loved to play them, because I'm a fan of that genre in jazz and in music. It can be a tricky proposition in jazz to pair raw immediacy of small group jazz improvisation with the lushness and richness and expansiveness, but also the structure of a string ensemble. But it's something that I think can be very, very compelling and interesting when it's done well. So it's an idea that I've always had, but also an idea that I resisted up until now. I really didn't feel ready to do it. I'm still not sure I was ready to do it, but I think over the past 4 or 5 years was when I started thinking maybe it's time.
Well, you put your finger on something interesting there. You talked about small group jazz, and we think first and foremost of interplay, improvisation, things happening in the moment, flexibility of form. Mm-hmm. With the orchestral tradition, obviously it's about scoring, it's about things being written down, absolute precision, and a manuscript,
right,
which doesn't change usually from bar to bar.
Right.
So is there a fundamental exercise of tuning, of kind of literally and figuratively, of these two models, getting them in harmony, that you have to do?
I guess there is. I suppose there's a negotiation that has to take place, between these different musical vocabularies, these different modes of expression. But I think that at its best, that negotiation, that resolution takes place less in a conceptual way and more in an organic way. I mean, I think if you approach it thinking, okay, well, I'm trying to fuse these different elements together, then that approach can backfire on you. You know, if you think, okay, well, these things are different, they don't belong together, but I'm trying to find a way to make them work together, then it might end up feeling sterile or forced or overly conceptual. But if you approach it with the feeling that it's music, and if we trust our musical instincts, and we have to think about this and we have to think seriously about this, but we have to do it in a way that feels good, you know? And for me, a lot of the key to this project, to making this album, was surrounding myself with musicians, collaborating with musicians that I think instinctively, organically, I felt would know and feel how to make this natural. You know?
Well, on that note, you've got your long-standing quartet, Brian Blade on drums, mm-hmm. Larry Grenadier on bass, mm-hmm. Brad Meldow on piano,
yes,
who's also the producer,
mm-hmm.
and that you have the arrangers as well, Dan Coleman, Brad, and Patrick Zimmerly.
Exactly.
So the team is, I suppose, a team that you know well.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, as you say, the relationship with Brad and Larry and Brian, well, I mean, you know, they're three of the greatest musicians, I think, of our generation, of our time, and three of my closest collaborators over the years. I've played with all three of them, you know, kind of been playing with them since I started playing seriously after I moved to New York. I knew that they would be the perfect band for a recording like this, because not just because of our trust and empathy and experience playing together over the years, but also because, you know, these are musicians who are committed to jazz improvisation and being in the moment and the rawness and the unpredictability of the moment. They love songs and they understand the importance of serving a song when you're interpreting it. And that was very important to me, especially with a project like this. But yeah, Highway Rider was kind of a direct impetus for this, because it was the first experience I had had at least the first very satisfying musical experience I had had working with strings. And I was so impressed and inspired by what Brad did conceptually with the album, and also the string writing and the way in which he made these two worlds work together. So I knew after being involved with that project, I wanted to do this sort of record with Brad, and I knew that I needed his guidance and his aesthetic sense to help me negotiate all of this, and that we were all invested in artistically.
So it's a real collaboration.
Really? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I think that sets us up nicely for another piece. We've already played Lush Life by Billy Strayhorn. We're going to play Wayne Shorter's Infant Eyes, which is one of the standards that you cover mm-hmm. on the album. Why did you choose this tune?
You know, it's because it's kind of a perfect tune. This is a song that very early on I was pretty sure that I wanted to do. It's a gorgeous ballad, a gorgeous melody. It's also harmonically, I mean, you know, part of Wayne's genius is writing these soaring, you know, indelible melodies, but with these harmonies that are really, really interesting and provocative for improvisation. It has a very interesting form. It's composed of 3 9-bar phrases, which is very unconventional.
That's typical Wayne, isn't it?
Yeah. But you wouldn't know it from hearing it. It's just, it's kind of a perfect tune.
Okay. This is Infant Eyes by Joshua Redman from his new album, Walking Shadows. Infant Eyes by Wayne Shorter, featured on Joshua Redman's new album, Walking Shadows. Joshua, that piece features you on soprano. The first piece that we played, Lush Life, featured you on tenor. Mm-hmm. Does it change significantly the way that you approach the strings when you move from one horn to another?
Whenever you change any element, something changes. You know, I mean, when I pick up the soprano, whether there are strings there or not, it's a different instrument. And it's, you know, I mean, the soprano is an instrument that I've played for a while, but I feel like I haven't played it. I mean, I'm not even saying I play the tenor well, but I definitely haven't played the soprano well, except maybe a couple years ago. I finally started to feel like, wow, I can start to really express myself on this instrument. You know, it's been taken a long time to get myself to the point where I feel like, you know, like I can kind of play the soprano. So every time I pick up a different instrument, yeah, it's a different feeling. I have to know that instrument. And in the context of the strings, I have to know that instrument and how it relates to the strings. Ultimately, I want every instrument to feel like it's an extension of my body, my soul. I want it to be my voice. And I want to sing through that instrument. When we were talking about making this record, and I was talking to Brad about it. At one point, I thought, you know, I think I want to just play tenor on the record, you know, because there weren't that many songs that I thought would even work with soprano. Infant Eyes was one of the few that I thought had the possibility of working on soprano. And Brad was really, he said, well, look, man, this is your record. You can do what you want, obviously. But, and I think you should play soprano because I guess he felt that soprano would really, on certain songs, be a voice that could bring something different.
Well, this is it. I think it has an operatic quality. I mean, certainly if you listen to it in the hands of a Wayne Shorter or a Joe Lovano, there is that operatic quality which comes through, which I think would be perfect for a setting which has orchestration.
Sure, sure. I'll tell you, and you know, from a purely kind of more technical standpoint, I mean, the soprano, the range of the soprano, I mean, you know, the tenor is nowhere, has no relationship to the range of the violin, right? The violin is basically like in a completely different octave than the tenor. I mean, even, except when I go into the altissimo on tenor, which I probably do too much. but the soprano actually does live in the violin's range. So you can, you know, maybe the soprano, you can soar with and above the orchestra. You can live in that range that the violins live in. So that gives it a different quality. It speaks through and speaks above in a certain way. You know?
Can you tell me about some of the first quote-unquote jazz strings albums that you ever heard?
Sure, sure. There's so many vocalists' records with strings. You know, Sarah Vaughan, Ella Fitzgerald, Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, Louis Armstrong even. You know, I mean, I think jazz vocalists have mined that territory to the greatest degree and probably with the most success. In terms of jazz instrumentalists, Bird with Strings was one of the first that I think I really checked out. And I love that record. I love the way Bird sounds on that record. I'm not, you know, not always crazy about the strings themselves and the string arrangements themselves on that record, but that's part of the charm of the record for me. The strings can kind of sound a little, maybe a little sentimental, you know, maybe that negotiation didn't quite come off, but it's a testament to his genius that he can make it work even if there is some weird tension between the worlds of jazz and the string writing on that record.
Well, I think he manages to bring out the contrasts, and at times that kind of lushness that the strings give you.
Yeah.
Makes him sound a bit edgier.
Right. But yet at the same time, it brings out, you know, the supreme lyricism and melodicism of Bird, you know, because which is ultimately part of one of the keys to his genius. You know, I mean, he's one of the greatest innovators in the jazz language. And you know, I mean, I think at the time his music sounded, you know, maybe edgy and abstract to a lot of people. But, you know, he's a supreme melodist. And I think that this brings out that rhapsodic aspect of his playing. But in terms of albums, Clifford Brown with strings, that's a touchstone for me. That's a gorgeous record. Yeah. Ben Webster with strings is a great record. Stan Getz's Focus is a very interesting record. These are ones that I was particularly aware of.
I just want to close by playing the track Final Hour, which it stands as something very, very unique within the record, mm-hmm. because it's a duo. Mm-hmm. It's you, yes. and Brad Meldow on piano. It made me think indirectly of something very important that the great Joe Henderson said, and that is, in every big band, you have to have this great engine, which mm-hmm. is the rhythm section, or it could be a trio right in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And I thought about your group being this core within the orchestration, mm-hmm. and then within that core, there's the duo.
Right. In the case of Final Hour, I also felt it was really important. You know, Brad and I, over the past couple years, we've worked together the most in the duo format. We did a couple of long tours playing duo, which is really, I mean, I've had the time of my life playing in that format with him. And you know, this piece is actually not a typical duo piece for us, because most of our duo pieces are really open-ended, and, you know, we might just start hinting at them at a melody and then we just go for it. You know, there's a lot of, we deconstruct tunes, they're very open and free. This is actually, there's not really any improvisation on this piece. It's kind of a little interlude, a through composed piece. But I think still, you know, there's something of our duo spirit, of our connection that gets represented in this.
Let's listen to Final Hour. Joshua, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure, Kevin.
And
thank you.
And hope to see you again soon. This is Final Hour by Joshua Redman, featured on the album Walking Shadows.
Many thanks to Kevin Legendre, who was talking to Joshua Redman about his life and music. The new album Walking Shadows is out now on the Nonesuch label this week, and you can hear Joshua play at the Wigmore Hall in London on May the 11th with Christian McBride. And that final track was called Final Hour from the new CD Walking Shadows. I'm Claire Martin, and this is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 on 90 to 93 FM, online and on digital radio. And remember, you can catch us on the BBC iPlayer for the next 7 days. Tonight's concert performance is highlights of the opening night of this year's Steinway's Two Piano Festival at the Pizza Express Jazz Club in Soho. The festival is now in its fifth year and also featured Jason Rebello and Dave Newton, which you may have heard highlights of a few weeks ago, and a set from Alex Wilson and Peruvian pianist Cesar Correa, which Jazz Lineup will broadcast over the coming weeks. Well, tonight's set features two Hungarian pianists playing at the top of their game, both critically acclaimed and award-winning virtuoso pianists. So let's hear them now as they open their set, Gábor Zeki and János Nagy, with Más Naposan. Thank you. taken from this year's Steinway 2 Piano Festival at the Piazza Express Jazz Club in Soho. That was Gábor Zeki and Janos Nodge with Blues for Russell. Well, that's almost the end of the show. Remember, there's plenty more jazz on BBC Radio 3 with Jez Nelson on Monday nights at 11. This week he has concert sets from the Kit Downs Quintet, Tony Kofi and the Moses Boyd Trio. And on next week's jazz lineup, Julian Joseph presents music recorded in Derry, Londonderry, as part of the celebrations for Derry's title as the UK's City of Culture. He'll be featuring Trish Clue's quintet and the Lindley Hamilton Sextet featuring vocalist Dana Masters. But to finish tonight, a new CD released on May the 6th, a live recording from back in 2006 from the Fleece Jazz Club, which was then located in Boxford. Pete King and Alan Skidmore pay tribute to the great drummer Elvin Jones with their tribute, Forever Elvin. Pete King on alto sax and Alan Skidmore on tenor sax, Steve Mellings at the piano, Alec Dankworth on bass and the late Martin Drew on drums, making up this swinging and committed quintet. Let's go out on the track, Blues Minor. From me, Claire Martin, until next time, bye-bye.
Hello and welcome to BBC Radio 3 Through the Night with me, Jonathan Swain. For this opening hour or so tonight, we have a visit to the 2010 Chopin and His Europe Music Festival. The festival's aim being to put Chopin in the context of his contemporaries and forebears, distant forebears in the case of this concert. The players are Il Giardino a Monaco, their director is Giovanni Antonini, and their programme is built around Renaissance and Baroque sonatas and chaconnes by Merula, Schmelzer, Telemann, Vivaldi. And first, Giovanni Battista Fontana. Fontana was a leading figure in the early development of the sonata, most of them published, like this one, in Venice in 1641, a decade after his death. music by the Italian composer and violinist Giovanni Battista Fontana, whose life and work is shrouded in mystery. That was the Sonata No. 16 from a set of Fontana sonatas published in Venice in 1641. The players are Il Giardino Armonico, and staying in 17th century Italy, they turn now to Tarquinio Merula, an organist and violinist from the centre of violin making, Cremona. This is a Ciacconna for two violins. The Ciacconna for two violins and continuo, Opus 12, by Merula, who was a generation on from Monteverdi. Il Giardino Armonico now in this concert, and music by Johann Heinrich Schmelzer, who in the 17th century was Kapellmeister at the Vienna court. One of Schmelzer's contemporaries dubbed him the famous and nearly most distinguished violinist in all Europe. How disheartening to be considered nearly the best violinist. This is a sonata of his for three violins. The Sonata in D for three violins and continuo by Johann Heinrich Schmelzer. The performers Il Giardino Armonico at the 2010 Chopin and his Europe Music Festival in Warsaw. And we hear them now in music by Georg Philipp Telemann. I see Telemann's been described as the greatest composer who didn't write a tune everyone knows. But he wrote a great many that most probably people would be very happy to know. And here are a good few of them now. This Telemann Sonata includes parts for two Schaums, a double reed forerunner of the oboe.